Good evening, everyone. I want to welcome you to Oceano Community Services District with our Board of Directors on February 11th. And I'd like to have a roll call, please.
Director Austin?
Here.
Director Joyce Sunnison?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Vice President Rose?
Here.
And President Gibson?
Here. Okay, flag salute. Ms. Rose, would you like to read the salute?
Fill your heart. Begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have.
We need to stand up and do that.
We have agenda review. Does anyone need to make any changes on the agenda?
No.
Okay, does somebody want to make a motion?
I move that we accept the agenda as presented.
I'll second that. Okay. We have a first and a second, Carrie. And now we'll take public comment for items not on the agenda.
We have to do that.
Yeah.
I don't see on the agenda part at all.
You just turned it off.
The board met in closed session prior to this regular session, and the item was for the evaluation and performance of the district manager. No action was taken under the Brown Act.
Okay, we'll bring it back to public comment.
Good evening, Charles Varney. I'm here tonight to announce that San Luis Obispo County Surfrider has kicked off its Vehicle Free Beach, Oceano Vehicle Free Beach campaign, along with National Surfrider. And just want to explain a little bit about it to the board and to the people in the audience. Our goal is that we propose that the Coastal Commission and the Board of Supervisors and State Parks and the state legislature come together and create a plan for a vehicle-free beach for Oceano by December 2030. These four entities bear a responsibility to find a solution for the problem that they created over 44 years ago. Pier Avenue was designated as a temporary access route to the beach and to the state vehicle recreation area with the promise of a southern entrance in 3 years. That promise has not been kept for more than four decades, and Oceano requires a vehicle-free beach to correct the environmental and economic injustice it has suffered for more than four decades. What we're proposing is a 2.2-mile vehicle-free beach starting 0.3 mile north of Pier Avenue and ending 1.9 miles south of Pier Avenue at Pole 4, which is the boundary of the Oceano Dunes Preserve. The positive economic and environmental impacts on Oceano from a vehicle-free beach would be profound. It would be the greatest driver of economic revitalization in the history of Oceano. There are thousands of tourists who want to play at a beach that is free of vehicular traffic, and the potential economic boost to Oceano's economy will be huge. For example, greatly expanded local employment and tourist and non-tourist related support services, plus secondary economic ripples across the five cities economy, increased demand for local sit-down and takeout food and beverages, increased demand for local tourist housing in Oceano, including hotels, cabins, trailers, and short-term rentals, increasing occupancy for state, county, and private campgrounds, increased demand for beach recreation rentals like ocean and dune surfing supplies, surf schools, beach bicycles, plus tourist-related clothing and souvenir shopping, increased demand for ecotourism and beach recreation services in the Oceano Dunes Preserve and the Pacific Ocean. The environmental benefits are also profound, starting with the elimination of vehicles crossing the Arroyo Grande Creek, And, you know, and certainly a big advantage to the SVRA, where there will be no more shutdowns of access or exit, you know, from the SVRA due to the creek rising, and fewer ruined vacations. Time up, or is that my 1 minute warning?
30 seconds.
Okay. I want to emphasize that this is not about shutting down the SVRA. Originally, the SVRA and a vehicle-free beach at Oceano were designed to coexist, and that coexistence can happen. What happens with the SVRA is in the courts, but most of the population of Oceano do not want to wait another four decades for a vehicle-free beach. Finally, I'd like to thank the utilities crew for the cleanup on 22nd Street. I hate to be the one sending in the 311s for 22nd Street, but it's just where people dump stuff. And it's really nice to have the get it cleaned up. Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other public comment? Seeing none, then we'll move on to, is Commander McDaniel here?
He's not, but Sergeant Bird's here.
Okay.
I'm Sergeant Bird with the Sheriff's South Station. I have the stats for January of 2026. So compared to last year, calls for service are definitely down. Last year we had approximately 370 calls for service. This year we only had 249. So that's a significant decrease in the calls for service. The calls for service consisted of two assault and battery calls, both of which were domestic violence related, 15 disturbance calls, two burglary calls, two theft reports, both of which were petty theft, three vandalism calls, no mail theft, 31 assist other agencies, seven suspicious circumstances, four which were suspicious subjects, three that were suspicious vehicles, and then 41 traffic stops, whether it was vehicle stop, bike stop, or pedestrian stop. All that resulted in 12 arrests, including warrants and citations.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have any questions for the sergeant?
Okay. You guys have a wonderful night.
Thanks for coming. Okay, and I don't think Fire Chief Hallett is here, so we'll have Mr. Maricino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino, Utility Systems Manager. So Lopez is currently at 83.7% full, which is 41,390 acre feet. We had zero sewer system overflows in January. We had got delivered just over 18 acre feet of water from Lopez, and state was at 20 acre feet, and we pumped just over 5 acre feet for January. Continuing to do daily and monthly samples. We had 9 work orders, 13 USAs, 7 customer service calls, 4 after hour call outs. One was for an unlock after we had lock offs. The second one was after-hours turn-on. The next one was a turn-off for a possible leak off of 23rd Street. And the fourth one was a broken service line on the customer side that we shut off so they could get it repaired. Oh, and 2300 Cienega, space 14, was also a customer service line broke. We finished meter reads. After meter reads, we had leak notification rereads, plus the common codes from the meter readers and meter changeouts. Lockoffs due to no payment. We paved 2300 Cienega space 15 from a service line break that previously happened. And we prepped the water yard to do some paving because we had a new shed come in. So we paved about 12 tons of asphalt over there for the next 2 days. We had multiple concrete and asphalt runs for recycling, first of the month equipment runs, and alarm function checks. We started our hydrant maintenance program, weed abatement at Well 8. We had a hydrant get hit on pier again. Luckily, this time it just broke one of the breakoff bolts down at the bottom, so it was leaking at the bottom, and all we had to do was replace the bolts and the gaskets. No one saw who hit it, so there was no police report. But since then, we have gotten it reinstalled, and it's functioning fine. We framed up a pad at well 8 for our new well house, and I'll talk about that a little later. We had a line break at 661 Lancaster, and you know our vacuum equipment's down, so we had the city of Pismo Beach support us with their vacuum. After that, we had paved Lancaster, got that completed. We also paved outside the parking lot over here. You know that there was a water valve that was kind of low when you pull into the back, a little dip. County paved, and we paved and raised our utilities. As you leave the back parking lot, you'll see it. We had one of the service trucks that had to get smogged for the purpose of the bar reporting. It's a Bureau of Automotive Repair. And we had one 311 ticket, and 22nd Street has been cleaned up. Now, we're going to give you a little slideshow for the utility improvements at the yard. And as you see right there, the first picture that you have right there is the old Wellhouse 3 and restroom. So just to let you know, the only running water was the toilet for the last quite a few years, over a decade. And the next picture you're going to see over there is our office. To the left is our office and kind of a workshop put together. And right there you see the other side of Wellhouse 3. And right there we had already demoed the restroom, and that's just another look at the Wellhouse 3 and our office and workshop in the back. And a little more of the demo, you got to take apart the metal panels. You can see the Wellhouse 3 is gone where the dirt's at, and we're paving that area currently. And it's getting down to the studs. So that is our new to us, but it's a used modular office that also has an ADA ramp right there, and then the roll-offs on the side. We got a little stuff delivered. We'll put that away, make a nicer picture next time. And then that's the layout. You got three in the back, two in the front, and then you got a restroom with hot water and a sink. Yes. And that is the concrete pad that we poured. We self-performed that rebar. It is a 15 by 20 foot pad that the workshop is being installed. So as you can see, you got some new asphalt. We're paving where the dirt's at. We got to finish some paving, some concrete ramps. But that is our new workshop plus storage. And we're getting there. There's a little bit more paving to do and a concrete ramp that we'll install. So yeah. Just to give you a little update on the yard, so you can visually see it. You're more than welcome to come out anytime. We should have all that done. Hopefully, I would say in the next week. It's just as the asphalt plant runs, that's when we can get it. Any questions?
No, but we're looking upscale, I think.
Getting there. Yes, absolutely.
You do have air conditioning now, right?
We do. We do have AC and we do have heating, which we never had before.
Right.
Correct.
And
running hot water. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay, and I don't see Fire Chief Hallett, so Mr. Brown.
Thank you, President Gibson, members of the board. My own comments. Mr. Maricino and the utility staff didn't ask for a new office. They didn't ask to have that stuff demoed. They've done it in-house at very minimal cost, and I think it's a great improvement, and hopefully if we get one of these really hot or cold days, we could use that AC or heater and really enjoy some comfort. They don't spend a lot of time in the office, right? They're out in the field a lot, but right. It is nice to have those improvements. And they're also able to build the shed exactly the way they want it, so they're doing a custom outfitting of that. In terms of my main activities since we last met in January. On January 15th, Mr. Maricino and I met with Chief Hallett of Five Cities Fire to review their use of district facilities and locations for training and water use. FCFA has removed their training equipment from Well 8, which opens up the area for our well improvements, which we'll talk about later tonight. I've attended several meetings with Zone 3 managers and legal as well as the county prior to last Friday's settlement conference with the plaintiffs regarding the Environmental Species Act claims related to Lopez Dam and AG Creek. Zone 3 and Slough County negotiated objectively and in good faith last Friday, but ultimately settlement was not reached. More discussions are expected, and I'll continue to advocate for expediency to get OCSD passed this critical issue. On January 16th, I met with one of the new Assistant Chief Executive Officers of the county, Lisa Howe, regarding the existing lease terms for the building we own, which is the sheriff's office across the way, and the building we rent, which is the current office that we're all in now. There is agreement that lease amendments are needed to clarify terms, but the exact amendment terms are yet to be finalized, and I'll be working with Mr. Schultz and the county to kind of go through those amendments, and of course we'll bring them back to you once they're finalized. On January 21st, I, along with some cities, county, and special district reps, met with IWMA staff and two IWMA board members to review and provide input to their strategic plan. There's a IWMA strategic plan update website that is available for review. On January 22nd, Mr. Schultz and Directors Villa and Joyce Sunderson and I all attended the Slough County CSDA, California Special District Association annual chapter meeting and dinner. Kate Ballantyne, the county assistant CAO, was a featured speaker, and she highlighted some of the county's reorganization and departments that she oversees. And I was also nominated to the Slough County Chapter CSDA Board to be the vice president for 2026, so I'm excited to fulfill that role. On the 27th of January, I attended a critical meeting with the county, the National Marine Fisheries Service, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife to discuss the status of the county in Zone 3's Habitat Conservation Plan. We often call it the HCP, and that's a necessary plan to be approved by the regulatory agencies. Of those that reviewed the document, we received positive feedback, and we're still awaiting National Marine Fisheries review. Let's see what else. Just kind of rolling through these. This morning I attended the Zone 3 TAC meeting. Everything in Lopez is in good standing. The reservoir recovered from 79% full in late 2025 to over 83.5% today, with more significant rain coming next week. I wanted to also give a quick shout out to Mr. Maricino for his reconciliation of water usage and reporting to the county staff for the purposes of ongoing budget. He's done a good job of really making sure that they're reporting things accurately. Last two items, staff and the board have made great progress and achievements on multiple milestones, including the evaluation of our improvement of our courtyard, which we just talked about, managing our groundwater basin, which is the first item on the agenda, and our core utility services for water and sewer and fire flow, which we'll talk about throughout the meeting tonight. And then just another reminder, I will be out of the office from February 16th to the 27th. I'll still check my email and phone, but I will be out. So that concludes my report. I'm happy to take any questions if there are any from the board.
Anyone have questions for Mr. Brown?
No.
Okay, seeing none. Okay, we'll move on to board of directors and outside committee reports. And I did have a meeting with Zone 3, but basically that was to review the budget, and we had no business items. Vice President Rose?
Nothing to report.
Director Austin?
The sanitation meeting was canceled, so I have no report.
Okay. And Director Villa?
Nothing to report.
And Director Joyce Sennison?
A grant became available through Parks and Rec, and we've applied for that grant. We have not heard back yet, but our plan is to have a community garden for the community to plant things in.
Okay. Questions? Do you know the location?
It's on 22nd Street. It's right across the street from the community center.
I think it's
19th
Street.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, we'll look forward to more information on that. Okay, so we'll take public comment now on special presentations and reports.
Just got a quick question for Mr. Brown. When the environmental organizations filed the suit around the Steelhead Lopez issue, from what I understand, their intent was to force a county to the negotiation table and go into settlement talks around it, and the county made the choice to file a countersuit and go into court. My understanding is that the county did that unilaterally, or and I'm not sure, but I'm pretty sure that the OCSD never voted to allocate tens of thousands of dollars for a lawsuit. And my understanding is that the county went ahead unilaterally with that lawsuit. They've run up $2.5 million, and they're coming back to us, Grover, and Arroyo Grande to pay for it. Now, I'm sure that not all of that is correct, but could you straighten me out and let everybody know what is actually going on?
There's been no countersuit filed at all by the county. The county has, no, that's not a countersuit. There's been no countersuit that's been appealed. It's only a suit that's been filed against the county by the environmental groups. No countersuit has ever been filed.
And then if, Mr. Schultz, stop me if I'm off base here, but the other thing that I think is worth clarifying is that we have an operations and maintenance agreement with the county for Lopez as a water contractor, and case law demonstrates that litigation falls into the category of operations and maintenance of the facility, and so costs are therefore passed on per that contract.
That's at least the current position of the county.
Yeah.
That might not be the position of other.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other public comment? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close public comment and move to the consent agenda. Everyone want to take a look at the minutes and cash disbursements?
President, if it's okay, while folks double check the consent agenda, I might want to pull item C for a brief review of one of the charts that I think is worth some kudos for the district and Ms. Cassiola in particular. I think it's on, was it page 24? Oh, 28 of your packet. This is the investment report for the last quarter. There's a couple things that are worth noting here. The one that's highlighted in green in the lower right is our interest earnings for the last quarter, and you can see they're significantly improved from the prior period, where the 3 months of October, November, December sum up to around $14,000 and some change, and in the last period of the same time frame for this current fiscal year, it's $37,000, and so this is part of how we're managing our reserves, and I think it's, you know, not a lot of districts are able to report of our size and with our budget that they're, you know, earning this kind of interest and having both liquidity of funds and salient investments with limited district resources. So kudos to the board for allowing us to use our current resources to do this, and to Ms. Cassiola for making sure that we're maximizing our resources.
Okay. Yeah, thank you to Ms. Cassiola and Mr. Brown for that. Okay, so I'll entertain a motion on the consent agenda. Okay, we'll do each time. Okay, yeah, we'll go ahead and take public comment. Thank you.
Julie Tacker, and I saw again the final payment for the Maruska exercise. I just wanted you to realize and understand that not only are you paying that man, but all of your staff has to take hours off to go through the exercises that he performs with them. So that's costing you staff time. And then when Mr. Brown points out this investment and the return that you're getting, keep in mind that that's not money that's now available to spend, and that you've just gone through some pretty significant rate increases for your community, and in my mind, you would want to hold down expenses because your ratepayers are feeling the pain. And you know, yes, this is good for the health of the district's finances, but ultimately, don't think it's a slush fund. Don't think it's something that's available that you can just burn. So kind of the both subjects, the Maruska expense and this amount of money, in my mind, is something that was not anticipated. That was not something that was budgeted for. And here you have this return. Let's keep the money in the accounts.
Okay, any other comments on the consent agenda?
Okay. We'll bring it back to the board.
Move that we approve the consent agenda as presented.
A second.
First and a second. Roll call, please.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Vice President Rose?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Joy Sunnison?
Yes.
And President Gibson?
Yes. Okay, on our business items, I think we'll take them one at a time. So, Mr. Brown?
Yes, President Gibson, members of the board. Agenda item 8A is the discussion and consideration of the 2025 Northern Cities Management Area Technical Group Strategic Plan. And I wanted to give a few introductory remarks before turning it over to Michael Steele from WSC, who's stepped up to the microphone for us. Thank you for coming, Mr. Steele. Part of our annual activities for NCMA really, as you all know, is to monitor our groundwater and to report our findings to the court annually. We develop an annual report. It's available on our website. A lot of work goes into it. And we do regular coordination meetings among the NCMA technical group. Part of discussions that have happened over the last few years was to use this year as a time period to update the strategic plan that the group had formulated. I don't know if it was 5 or 8 years ago. Mr. Steele might be able to tell you. But it was due for an update. I participated in that along with all of the NCMA partners, and we're proud of the work product. We did want to daylight it for the board and the public and just kind of let you know what our strategic plan says, what our goals for the year is, how we change the plan, and how it's helping guide us in managing the groundwater basin. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Steele.
Great. Thanks so much, Mr. Brown. And thank you all for having me tonight. My name is Michael Steele. I'm a project manager and a civil engineer for WSC. WSC is a consulting engineering company based in San Luis Obispo, and we've been serving the Northern Cities Management Area in a variety of capacities since 2009. And so real quickly, I'm going to talk about a couple terms. I want to make sure everybody is aware of what those are. You may or may not know that beneath our feet lies the Santa Maria River Valley Groundwater Basin. It's one of the main water supply sources for southern San Luis Obispo County. And in the early 2000s, the right to pump water from that groundwater basin was litigated. And so from that litigation, the court divided the groundwater basin into three different management areas. The area that we are in is the Northern Cities Management Area. So that's what we talk about when we talk about the NCMA, or the Northern Cities Management Area. It's that northernmost management area, and there are the NCMA agencies, which the court put in charge of monitoring and reporting on that area of the groundwater basin. And so those NCMA agencies are the City of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, Oceano Community Services District, and Pismo Beach. And so then the last level in that is there is an NCMA technical group, or NCMATG, which was formed and is a group of representatives from those agencies as well as consultants who meet at least monthly to carry out the requirements of the adjudication as well as to collaborate on water resources management. So with all of that, it's an honor to be back in front of you. I was here maybe about a year and a half ago to talk about some of the services that we provide to your district as well as the NCMA. And at that time, we were looking forward to one of our big upcoming initiatives, which was the update of the strategic plan. So I'm here today to, like Mr. Brown said, to provide a brief update and overview of what we accomplished in that process. So you can go ahead and go to the first slide. So this is our third version of the NCMATG strategic plan. And so the first of which was completed more than a decade ago. And so why even do this? What's the point? What's the goal of having a strategic plan? So really first, it's to define the shared mission and vision of the group so that we all agree on that purpose. There's a lot of different agencies and a lot of different people on that group. And so this alignment that it creates helps to allocate the group's time and money and towards initiatives with the greatest impact and helps to focus the work of this group. And then the plan is really a framework where it's intended to be flexible and help the agencies to navigate challenges, to capitalize on new opportunities, ultimately, really with the goal of guiding the group's effort, focusing decision-making, and driving meaningful results from the group. Okay, we can go to the next slide. So we started by, or I wanted to provide an overview of the process that we took to update this plan. And so the NCMA technical group led each of these steps along that process. And then we also had engagement from executive management. So that was your general manager as well as the city managers from the other NCMA agencies. And they provided really crucial input and feedback at critical moments to make sure that our end result aligned with agency priorities. And so I really wanted to highlight and acknowledge kind of the value that your general manager has brought to this process. He serves a somewhat unique role in that he is serves in that executive management function, but he's also a member of our technical group. And so I think that that really helps to focus all of the work that we do as a technical group and make sure that that aligns with the organizational priorities. And then really his active engagement has provided, I think, invaluable representation for the interests of the community of Oceano in those regional planning efforts. Okay, we can go to the next slide. And so kind of in the middle of that process, one of our key things that we did was we had a workshop, and this was well attended by representatives from multiple different agencies, and we got a lot of really good feedback and input from everyone, and we collaboratively developed a lot of the details or updated a lot of the details of our strategic plan. And so I think that this really kind of built on that legacy of collaborative water resources management that has occurred in South County since the 1980s and even before. You can go to the next slide. And so then that's a little bit about the process. Next, I wanted to highlight kind of some of the outcomes. You have the strategic plan, I think, in your agenda packet, so you can see all of it there, but just wanted to highlight a couple of the high-level outcomes. So first and maybe most importantly is the mission statement of the TG. And so the mission of the NCMATG is to preserve and enhance the sustainability, quality, and affordability of water supplies for the Northern Cities area by managing groundwater resources using science-based approaches, enhancing supply reliability, advancing the legacy of cooperative water resources management, promoting adaptive management, protecting water quality and supply through proactive monitoring, and maintaining cost-effective water supplies. We can go ahead and go to the next. And so, after that mission statement, the next section was a new section that we added in this version of the strategic plan, really highlighting the roles and responsibilities of different stakeholders that interact with the NCMATG. And don't worry, I'm not going to read all of this text to you, but I wanted to highlight a couple of them that were maybe relevant tonight, the roles of yourselves as well as the public. And so you, along with your district management, do many things in your roles as you serve the district. Some of those, or among those, being engaging the public, leading policy direction, and strengthening regional partnerships. We can go to the next slide. And then the public also plays key roles related to the NCMATG in that it helps to inform NCMA agency priorities and elects NCMA agency governing bodies, among other roles. The next section of the strategic plan goes into key objectives. So these are the how. So how does the NCMATG carry out its mission? And we settled on these three key objectives. Number one, enhance water supply reliability. Number two, support effective water resource management. And three, conduct effective outreach and regional coordination. Go to the next slide. And so as we go from those key objectives, how do we implement those? How do we turn that into action? And so the next section really goes into, okay, what are those initiatives that carry out those objectives that ultimately meet the mission of the TG? And so we started by memorializing the ongoing initiatives that the TG is regularly doing. And a lot of these are really based on the requirements of the adjudication. And so they include quarterly monitoring. So that includes both the levels of groundwater in the basin as well as water quality. Also, the group prepares and submits an annual report to the court. And then also ongoing collaboration with agricultural representatives is a key ongoing initiative. And that's something they're one of the main stakeholders in the basin. So we do that, as well as maintaining internal and external engagement. Okay. And then from there, really, the plan turns to look towards the future and what might be coming next. And so we did that through really developing an implementation plan. And so this kind of forward-looking portion of the strategic plan was basically identified strategic initiatives. So what are some future ways that we can continue to advance the key objectives and the mission of the TG? And so we, as a group, developed strategic initiatives. And then each of these strategic initiatives were scored according to different criteria. And then those criteria were then ranked by the TG providing feedback on the plan. So that allowed us to then develop a ranked list of all of these strategic initiatives based on the weighted criteria of priorities of the agencies. And then we have this implementation plan that then outlines some of the next steps of how the TG would implement those. And so the goal of this is to be flexible. It's not to be, you know, you have a point in time copy of that, but the goal is for the TG to regularly be updating this, to be reviewing this, with the goal of it helping to set agency priorities and be reviewed annually or more frequently, help to set with budget setting efforts, and help the group to determine what goals and what efforts we can focus on in upcoming years. And so that really concludes my presentation, but I'm happy to answer any questions and available to provide any additional information.
Yeah, I had a couple just questions. And what exactly on your objective, enhance water supply reliability? What do you do in the way of stormwater capture? I mean, what are you studying to actually?
Yeah, there is a stormwater capture plan. That was one of those strategic initiatives that's tied to that key objective. Yeah, and so the goal of that would be to study. So it hasn't happened yet. The goal would be to, in the future, study, are there other opportunities to capture stormwater that we haven't yet taken advantage of? I'll note that the county has done their own study, which provided some valuable effort. I know that the district has invested in stormwater capture, I believe, at the elementary school. Some of those efforts have already come to fruition. The goal of a study would be to potentially see if there are other opportunities out there that haven't been taken advantage of yet, and if those capture opportunities have the potential to benefit the long-term health of the groundwater basin.
Okay, so you're kind of saying that a lot of this is about planning for now and the future and not yet implemented?
That's correct. So it's really supposed to...
This is in addition to whatever we have now, then?
It's a guiding document to guide the ongoing efforts of, or the ongoing and the future efforts of the NCMA TG. So you're right. So some of it is aspirational. Some of it is like those ongoing initiatives that I highlighted are descriptive of the work that the TG, including your general manager and all of your neighboring agencies, are doing on a monthly and on a regular basis. Maybe to highlight right now, we are preparing the annual report for calendar year 2025, which is due to the court by the end of April. So that's one of those things. So it's a mix of aspirational as well as descriptive.
Okay. And where is the adjudication at this point? I mean, there's still in that process, correct?
We have a stipulation and a judgment that were, I believe the stipulation was finalized in 2005, and then end of the judgment in 2008, I think, if I have those right. And so we have requirements that are required to be upkept every year right now, and that hasn't changed. I think it's...
Those are ongoing. So it's status quo, and we're doing our annual reporting and, you know, doing our best to maintain the basin as it is.
Yeah, right. It's just ongoing.
Well, the reporting is ongoing. I think, you know, if you look at, it looks like President Gibson kind of honed in on pages 68, 69, and 70, which really say what the objectives are and how they got ranked and what their weighted score is. And these are kind of going to drive the NCMA technical group over the next 5 years in terms of what we attempt to accomplish. I think big picture, there's a push to coordinate better with our neighboring adjudicated basins and make sure that everyone else is doing the level of conservation and monitoring and quality reporting that we're doing.
Right.
And so I think that's also going to be a big effort going forward.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Those are my questions. Anyone else on the board?
I have no questions. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Steele, for coming in and sharing with us.
Thank you so much.
Improving our knowledge.
So yeah, just be public comment, and then just for the board's knowledge, this is an information item. Yeah. So after public comment, no actions required by the board on this item.
So we'll take public comment on Mr. Steele's report on the business item 8A. Okay, seeing no one come forward, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the board for receive and file, or?
Yeah, correct.
If somebody wants to make a motion, we'll still do roll call.
What did you want us to?
I said we could still do a motion to receive and file, right?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. But I like to listen to myself, so.
If you want us to move that, we receive and file.
Yes.
I make a motion we receive and file this report.
A second.
It's better to be consistent.
Director Austin.
Yes.
Vice President Rose.
Yes.
Director Joyce Sennison.
Yes.
Director Villa.
Yes.
And President Gibson.
Yes. Okay, so now we'll go to business item 8B.
8B, President Gibson, members of the board, is the adoption of the notice of completion for the waterline replacement project. And I do think we have a slideshow for this one, Ms. Cassiola. But this is exciting for me. It's the first capital improvement project that I participated in start to finish with the district. and it came in essentially on time and on budget, and that's not always the case with construction projects. And so I wanted to kind of remind the board what we did before we ask you to adopt this notice of completion for the project. So as a reminder, the CIP projects were ranked. There's about 30 plus of them, and they're ranked between categories 1, 2, and 3. And I think some of the ones like 1-1, 1-2, and 1-3 have already been completed. These were the top remaining waterline improvement projects, 1, 4, 5, 7, and 9, 7, 8, and 10. And it's our first major replacement in the last 4 years. And we did most of it with grant money, so we probably spent around $750,000, but we got a $600,000 Prop 1 grant to get this done. So we'll kind of walk through some of these slides, and I'll show you some of the things that are worth noting. This is the plan, you know, kind of aerial view. And just as a reminder, you can see Pershing, Mendel, Pier Avenue. All of this work took place on the west side of Highway 1. And it's not because we love that neighborhood or the tourists go through there to go to the beach. The reason why is because that's where the water lines were in the worst condition. They were the oldest, and we had the most leaking. So it was simply a ranking of the need of those projects more than anything else. And I wanted to show some looks on this is the Utah Avenue four-valve cluster and what it took to kind of get in there and replace the water lines. You could see some brand new. We basically replaced 4- and 6-inch lines with 6-, 8-, and 10-inch lines. And so we increased our volume, increased our pressure, increased our capacity, reduced leaking, and really it's a big benefit to the district and district residents. Railroad and Mendel avenues were a little tricky. We got creative with the contractor and with the county to kind of meet some pavement standards that weren't perfectly documented prior to the project. And so you can see that we got an exception from the county to kind of realign our project. I think it was originally potentially going to go in the middle of the road, but I think for pavement restoration and alignment standards, we put it on the curbside. And you can see some of this backfill and paving work. And we did have to jog around this intersection here at Mendel and Railroad to make sure that the water line fit. We had to avoid a monument there that's right underneath the roller. Those are difficult to replace, and you don't really want to mess with those. And the other thing we got creative with some input from Mr. Maricino and our consultants, the designer had put the original water line straight down the middle of Railroad, and we were able to realign it off at the edge of pavement and save significant money in pavement restoration costs by putting it basically in the shoulder. And so that I thought was a creative field solution. This is some more of that realignment and cost savings. And then, of course, this is the backfill and patchwork there to get the new pavement in. This is what Truman looks like now. This was, again, the water lines were replaced, and one of the things that the contractor didn't do a perfect job of was determining what the pavement restoration was going to cost. And we got lucky in a sense that the county happened to have some scheduled work for pavement rehab here. And so we were able to piggyback on the existing county contract and get them to come out and repave the road after the water line was worked. And again, it was significant cost savings to the district to do that. And then I put a little circle around the fire hydrant because I thought it was significant, the fire flow improvements. And this is really a public safety issue. Prior to this project, we had flows measuring in the 300 to 350 gallons per minute range, which if you ask a firefighter, that's not enough. Pressure under all scenarios when they have to connect to multiple hydrants and really start to put out a fire, you really lose capacity quickly. And now we've tested them after the project, and we're up around 1,800 gallons per minute. And so that's a huge improvement in public safety and fire flow for this area. This is just some pictures of the service lateral connection, and I wanted to show the soil type. This is my first significant construction project that I participated in here on the Central Coast. In the Bay Area, where I'm from, we don't have soils like this. This is really loose. C-type soil is essentially sand. It has to be shored. It's very difficult to keep out of the workspace. But as you all know, we live basically dune side here. But just some of the difficult working conditions that I think were handled really well by our staff and by the contractor. And then, yeah, just, you know, we finished the project on time and on budget. I think Mr. Maricino, our utility manager, as well as the crew, did a lot of coordination and oversight with the contractor. Our office staff did a great job for our grant reporting, accounting, and billing. Canon staff, both the construction manager and design staff, were flexible and available. JF Will was the lowest responsible bidder, and they delivered the project on time as well, and they were relatively easy to work with. So kudos to them. And I didn't put the board up here, but really the board deserves special thanks as well, because it's your policy direction, your allocation of the money, and you're being responsive to our requests for these grants and implementing these projects. So let's throw the board of directors up there as well. So with that, I'll take any questions. And yeah, this requires the board to adopt the NOC.
I have a question. On this one picture where in Truman, I believe, they took out that sidewalk and they didn't put it back?
I believe they put it back. I don't know if Mr. Maricino can confirm, but if you go back to the Truman picture,
right there, where you circled the... I don't think they did.
Well,
did they?
The sidewalk, there was no sidewalk there. They had to re-put back the driveway apron.
Yeah.
And I think their tasks was to replace in kind. So I think they did that. Mr. Maricino, do you... You spend a lot more time out there than I have.
That is correct. Any sidewalk that they did remove, they did replace. As you can see right there, there's never been an existing sidewalk past that hydrant. Okay. So anything they disturbed, removed, they did replace as same, whether it was asphalt or concrete.
You can go check it out tomorrow. They didn't.
That's okay.
Okay. So any other questions of the board on that?
Nope.
Okay, we'll go and take public comment on business item 8B, adoption of the notice of completion of water line replacement. Okay, so seeing no public, we'll close public comment, and I'll bring it back to the board for a motion.
I make a motion that we adopt the notice of completion for the water line replacement project.
Second.
We have a first and a second. Roll call, please.
Me.
Vice President Rose?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Joy Sennison?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
And President Gisa?
Yes. Okay. Now we have business item C, review and consideration of the district's contract with MKN Associates.
That's correct, President Gibson, members of the board. So I wanted to bring this basically as an update to the board and to the public so that we know that we completed the sewer CIP, and that was a big accomplishment for us in 2025. It was reviewed by our Oceano Capital Improvement Committee, and it was adopted by the board, and it really is the first time in a long time that we have a sewer capital improvement plan that really outlines what our top priority projects are, which ones need to be invested in first, and how much they cost. As part of that contract that the board adopted for MKN, we had some money envisioned for design services and for perhaps supporting some grant submittals. And when we looked at closing out the capital improvement plan, we noticed that there was significant cost savings still remaining in the contract. And after speaking with utility staff and with MKN, it made sense to use that money to design some of our top priority projects. So what we're looking to do here is the Bell Ridge Sewer Rehab, project number A-3, the Wilmar Avenue Rehab, which is more of a spot location than a pipe replacement, as well as project A-7, which is various lateral replacements. And so what's before you tonight is just a summary of the fact that we'd like to move forward with continuing design work and getting a bid package ready. And if that goes well, we would come back to the board at a future date and ask the board if they want to issue that bid package out and potentially fund the project either in-house or if we have a grant, perhaps we have grant resources at that time, we can use those as well. There was one table, I don't know if Carrie, if we can put it up, that the kind of highlighted the cost savings on this project. Don't worry about it if you don't have it. It's on page 92 of the packet. But the board can look at it. You know, basically, what we had MKN do was take all of their remaining budget that hadn't been expended, and there were significant cost savings in the field investigations, as well as unused design services money, and we rolled that into both grant funding, bid phase, and design. And on that page 92 of the packet, that table just kind of shows what the current allocation of the projects are. The only thing that changed was basically lateral replacements. And in speaking with Mr. Maricino, the MKN had proposed a list of lateral replacements. And Mr. Maricino, I appreciate his feedback when he said, you know, some of those we can do in-house, and I really want to use it as an opportunity to train some of our newer staff. So let's have MKN pull some of those lateral replacements off of their bid package, mm-hmm. and we'll do those in-house. It'll be a cost savings, and it'll really enable me to, you know, do those for some of the first time with some of our new staff. So that was the only modification, really, from the original proposal. But of the $80,000 remaining, we're looking to spend $48,000 of the already adopted contract for these design services for the priority projects. So I'm happy to take any board questions.
And did this go to our CIP group?
We need to schedule an OSIP meeting. This has not gone to them, mm-hmm. But it will at their next meeting.
Okay, yep. Great. Okay, good. Nice to have some money left over.
Nice and mm-hmm. surprising.
Yep.
So just public comment here, no action required by the board because this is all within the existing adopted contract.
Right. Okay, we'll take public comment on this. Business item 8C. And seeing no one come forward, we'll bring it back to the board and I'll entertain a motion. We're going to do one anyway.
A motion to file it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, make a motion to file it.
A second. It.
First and second, roll call.
HC.
Vice President Rose?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Joyce Sunnison?
Yes.
And President?
Yes. Okay. Now we have 8D, Mr. Brown.
8D, President Gibson, members of the board, is consideration of a recommendation to approve the 2025 update to the Sewer System Management Plan that we often refer to as the SSMP. This is a required document for all sewer utilities, and it basically outlines our agency goals, our organization, our legal authority, our operations and maintenance, overflow emergency response plan if we do have a sewer spill, how we're controlling fats, oil, and grease, what mm-hmm. our capacity management is, how we monitor and measure our system, and, of course, our sewer system plan audit and our communication program. So I will say that this plan is substantially the same as it was in 2015 and 2020. I did receive a request from a board member, and I'll do this tomorrow, is to send you a list of the track changes. They're pretty small overall. Because the existing SSMP is in good condition. I want to give special thanks to Ms. Miller and Mr. Maricino. They really did the bulk of the work in updating the document. But really, it governs how we operate our system, how we respond to sewer system overflows, how we minimize those flows. So it really is a critical internal guiding document. And the Regional Water Quality Control Board is responsible for regulating our implementation of the SSMP, and so we'll be submitting this to them as soon as it's adopted by the board. So Mr. Maricino and I are happy to take any questions if the board has them on the SSMP, And this is an action item because we do need a board adoption.
Okay, anyone have questions on this? The SSMZ plan? Okay. Anyone in the public wish to discuss it? SSMP plan? Action item D. Okay, I'll see no one come forward. We'll bring it back to the board. I'll entertain a motion.
Recommend that we adopt the SSMP
Source System Update
Management Plan.
Is there a second?
Second.
First and a second. Roll call.
Vice President Rose?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Joyce Sennison?
Yes.
And President Gibson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, item E, consideration of recommendation to approve a budget adjustment in the amount up to $35,000 for the rehab of well house number 8.
Indeed, President Gibson, members of the board. So marching right along here, item E is basically what I'll put to you as match funds for the $45,000 Rose Foundation grant that we received. I might have Mr. Maricino come up and talk a little bit about the project overall, where we're at and what the objectives are. But in essence, Wellhouse 8, if you go out here to 13th Avenue and you make a right and you head towards the old firehouse, there's a gate, and right behind that is Wellhouse 8. It's our primary wellhouse. It's the one we use in order to augment our surface water supplies. And I think this is an opportunity to improve the wellhouse and really improve the treatment capacity, because I think right now we only have the capacity to treat with chlorine. And by doing these improvements, we're going to be able to treat with both chlorine and ammonia, as is the case. As is the case with our surface water systems. So I'll turn it over to Tony for kind of a summary of the project.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino, Utility System Manager. So this grant was applied by Nicole and Carrie. They did the 99.9% of the work, and they did receive it. As you all know, Well 8 is our main source of groundwater, and it has always been chlorinated, which is just free chlorine. State water and Lopez water, majority of the time, is chloraminated, which is a mix of 5-to-1. We'll keep it real simple, 5-to-1 chlorine and ammonia mix. It's a longer-lasting disinfectant. Unlike just chlorinated water, is a little stronger, but doesn't last as long. So I want to let you know what we have to go through when we use that well, and it's just chlorinated mixing with chloraminated water. So the primary issue is water quality, and it potentially higher levels of a regulated disinfectant byproduct when you just chlorinate, which is trihalomethane and haloacetic acid. It's a primary drinking water standard. So you have to be under that standard. So if we pump quite a bit, that is the potential risk that we can have in our system. The other thing is, as you pump with free chlorinated water, you can residual loss, your chlorine residual loss, because now you're putting free chlorine with chloraminated water, which can drop your residual in your system, which can increase taste and odor complaints. We can get that from the community if we're pumping a lot more than we normally do if we have to. The other is aesthetic to the water. Mixing different water chemistries can destabilize existing biofilms, leading to turbidity, which is the clarity, and color change to the water, and odor problems. So if we're pumping a lot, putting it in our system with the chloraminated water, we can get those types of complaints. But the biggest issue is the disinfectant byproduct, because it is a primary drinking water standard that we have to stay on top of. So with this project being done, we're going to get chloramines at our well site. We were trying to get a contractor to do this work. Nobody wanted to do the work. We would have brought it back to you. So we are self-performing this work. And what the $45,000 initially is going to is two pumps for the chlorine and ammonia. They're about $8,000 apiece. A static mixer, which will mix as you inject the water. That's about $12,000. And then an analyzer is another $10,000. So plus the small little the mixer and everything, that's up to about $44,000 just for the materials to eject, mix, And now, with this budget adjustment, we are pouring a concrete pad there. We're getting a well house that's going to be put there that actually separates the chlorine and ammonia because they cannot be in the same building. It's one building, but it's going to be a wall dividing the two so they could never, mix. So two doors, one building. With that being said, I'm really ecstatic about this because we've never had chloramines at our well site. And this is our primary well. You know, it's 1,000 gallons a minute, pumps direct the system. And we survived on it for over a week and during the time of emergency. So it's a great well. We did rebuild it back in, 16, 17. And it was installed in 84. So it's a great well. And I'm looking forward to it. And I appreciate Carrie and Nicole on this. They did an outstanding job getting this grant. So, and we'll be doing new piping with the static mixer. We're doing all the work in-house. Any questions?
Thank you for keeping it simple.
Yes, I try to, turbidity, just clarity of the water, just little things. Keep it real simple.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, that sounds a great project to finish. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay, so we will open this up to the public. The rehab of the well house number 8. And nobody's interested. We'll close public comment and bring it back to the board. And this is an action item. So we need a motion.
Make a motion that we approve the budget adjustment for the rehabilitation of well house number 8.
Second. Second that.
Okay. First and second.
Vice President Rose?
Yes.
Director Joyce Sunnison?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Villa?
Yes.
And President Gibson?
Yes. Okay, now we have action item F, discussion and approval of 2025-2030 multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan for Slo County and the Oceano Annex. Mr. Brown.
It's a mouthful. So thank you for reading that out. And again, related to the last item, appreciate Mr. Maricino coming in and really breaking down. He's out there working on the project with staff, and I'm glad to hear that it has momentum and excitement. So for the current item, item 8F, hazard mitigation plans are a federal requirement in order to be eligible for emergency management agency funds. Those of us that have been in this industry for a long time or for a short time all got a crash course in this during the 2022-2023 deluge of atmospheric rivers that we got that caused all kinds of damage, caused levees to break and flooding, lots of municipal damage up and down the state of California. And there were some jurisdictions that didn't have this in place, had legitimate claims to get FEMA funds, and were not eligible to get them because they lacked a proper plan. That's not the case with Oceano. I'm happy to report. I will give a little history. These are due every 5 years. The last time Oceano had their hazard mitigation plan, they were able to get a grant, and Oceano had its own standalone, that's the current existing one, standalone hazard mitigation plan. A couple of years ago, the county started collecting interest from member agencies and decided to renew their multi-jurisdictional. So this means basically all the CSDs, all the cities, and the county got together to do this update. And riding the county's coattails, they hired a consultant. We participated to make sure that all the Oceano assessments were correct. And so I think this is a nice minimal level of effort, minimal expenditure on our point to get this big plan updated, as well as the annex is basically a term for a chapter. So all of the non-cities, the special districts have chapters, and the Oceano chapter is in the annex, and it's pages 100 through 146, which talks about the specific hazards that we're vulnerable to, fire, flood, dam failure, sea level rise, all of those things have potential to impact us, and we have a plan to address those. So I'm happy to take any questions from the board. I will say that this requires a resolution, So we're going to ask the board to adopt a resolution, and we'll be sending that to the county. They already have a preliminary approval from FEMA for the plan, so it's been reviewed by the feds and approved. They're now just awaiting the local jurisdictions to approve it as well in order to make the multi-jurisdictional component of it complete. So happy to take any questions.
So that's only natural disasters, not man-made like the ice plant or?
Correct. Yeah, like invasive species, you know, there may be, under the biological chapter, there may be some components of mitigating hazards. I don't think it distinguishes between natural or man-made conditions. It's any hazard that could affect the community.
Okay.
I have a question. What's the main change from the last one?
The main change is that we had our own plan that only looked at us. All of those components have been rolled in to this multi-jurisdictional, and so it's a significantly different approach. So now we have a county-wide document that addresses anything that might happen in the county, including specific issues in Oceano, whereas before we didn't participate with the county multi-jurisdiction. Okay. They had one. We just had our own, which worked. It worked fine. We got a grant to do it. But, you know, to be honest with you, this is a more detailed and comprehensive plan and looks at things holistically.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense.
More than we can do on our own. Okay, so we'll take public comment on that hazardous mitigation plan. Okay, seeing no one in the public come forward, bring it back to the board. And
the staff recommendation is that the board adopt the resolution approving the 2025 to 2030 MJHMP.
Make a motion.
So moved.
Good. First. I'll second. First and a second. Roll call.
Director Villa?
Yes.
President Gibson?
Yes.
Director Austin?
Yes.
Director Joyce Sennison?
Yes.
And Vice President?
Yes.
Okay, our last item, G. Mr. Brown or Ms. Cassiola? Yes. The case may be.
Thank you. Thank you, President Gibson, members of the board. Item 8G, we have the district's fiscal year 2025-26 second quarter budget review. So we're going to go over each fund, and we're going to review the revenues, the expenditures, any front-loaded expenses. So front-loaded expenses are the ones we pay at the beginning of the year that remain the same, but look high when you look at just our second quarter review. We'll also discuss some high variances in each fund, but there are no budget adjustments recommended at this time. All right, the first is our administration fund. So here, this is where we collect our property taxes, and we based our year-end estimates off the county estimated property tax revenues and assessed values from the county's assessor's office. And if you look actually in the budget worksheets, you'll see that we have a lot higher revenues there as of December 31st, 2025, and that's because the county continued to send our property taxes over the 3.85%, which we all agreed upon in the property tax revenue agreement when we were divesting fire. So that finally is going through. So for November and December and now January, we have been receiving our 3.58%. And I've sent the county a reconciliation of what we owe them back. So waiting on them to send me two invoices, one for last year and one for this year. So you'll see, it looks like we collected $200,000 in property taxes, none of which we will, well, 50,000 of that we will keep. So it does look weird, but that is why. Then overall expenditures in the administration fund, they're tracking on budget, under budget, you can see by $151,000. We have front-loaded expenses, so those that are paid at the beginning of the year, and they were a part of our last review too, but I'll just go over them again, which is like the CalPERS UAL, the unfunded accrued liability, that is for the retirement plan for employees. We have under permits, licenses, and fees, we pay Muni Code, which holds all of our code. We pay Streamline, which runs our website. And we actually, I don't know if anyone's noticed, but we have upgraded our website to be ADA compliant. So all those costs are in that lineup. Other ones that look high is the local agency formation commission charge we get each year. It's about $15,000. Our annual software maintenance, that's for the software maintenance we use for our utility bills, our AP, our payroll, all those are about 20 grand a year. And then our boot allowance, which we issue to the operators each year for their new boots, part of their memorandum of agreement with the district. Also an item that is higher under office expense is we upgraded our server. So that is a server that hosts all our documents. It hosts all the softwares I was just discussing. And we actually received another grant. Actually, our newest employee, Allie Melendez, she helped and got that grant for us. We got $2,390 for that new server. So we've been working on that and ironing out the kinks. And we have a new server, which is faster and has a lot more room. Just a reminder, all the costs in this fund are then allocated to each fund in our under admin allocation, because all the costs in the office are then allocated to the funds because we work on multiple tasks, one of which is lighting, which is 1%, parks and rec, also 1% of these costs, facilities, 1.5%, water, the largest one we work on most of the time, 60%, wastewater, 32.5%, and garbage, 4% of our time. So all these funds then go to these funds. So you'll see here again, I have a fire fund, which we didn't think we would see, but we made that budget adjustment at our last meeting where we approved to pay off our safety plan, the unfunded accrued liability for the safety plan, which is that $189,270. All those agreements have been sent to CalPERS, just waiting for them to ask for this payment. So that's why that's in there and it's under budget adjustments. Lighting fund, you can see here we're under budget in expenditures by $9,380. Most of that is because we haven't spent a lot on operating supplies and the cost of lighting is low right now, but I'm sure with the time change we'll see them jump up again, but soon to change again in March. Then we have our parks and rec fund. So here the expenditures are expected to be under by $4,246 at the end of the year. So far this year, our Oceano Parks and Rec Committee has provided the Oceano Elementary $750 for the shirts for the new track for the commencement ceremony. And then most recently, the committee provided 200 buttons. And those buttons are for students that complete 10 miles, 50 miles and 100 miles around the track, and the district issued $283 to the school for that. Actually, to a customer who paid for them and gave the invoice. Then we have our facilities fund. So you'll see here, it looks like our revenues are going to be over by $108,000. Now that is because we applied for the PEG funding, which is the Public Education Outreach Grant, and we got that with the county. We've received $93,000 to upgrade the visuals and the audio in this boardroom. So we've received one quote so far. I've reached out to two others. One is coming next week to see if we can get anything lower than the $93,000 I've originally been quoted with. So as you can see, revenues are up by $108,000, but the expenditures are also going to be, once we pay for all those upgrades, that's where the grant revenues will go for. And whatever we don't use, we have to return. So we will find 93,000 upgrades. And then we also are in charge, based on the leases, the current leases we hold with the sheriff and the county, we are in charge of 17,000 for maintenance over there. So we'll schedule, coordinate, and pay for the maintenance at the substation, but then we apply back to the county and ask for reimbursement up to 17,000. So those are the large items there in the facilities funds that weren't predicted, the grant funds and the maintenance of the sheriff, but you'll see they offset each other. Then we're gonna go into our enterprise fund. Our first one, the biggest one, is the water fund. So as of this budget review, we have billed three of six of our billing cycles because we're bi-monthly. You can see that the district, we've recognized over 53% of our revenues. So we're right where we think we're going to be on water. Seasonally, as you know, in the summers, we see higher bills than we see in the winter. But with that said, we did a water revenue comparison, which is on page 220 of your board agenda. And it basically goes over what we targeted versus what we've been collecting. And we're right on budget. And It also goes back 4 years. You can see now that we have higher rates, we used to only collect $3 million. Now we're about 3.5 there. So that's why we share that, so you can see the difference between the rates from before the rate increase and the rate currently. Then under expenditures, we have obviously very big front-loaded expenses. One is Lopez. Two is our state water charges that include, you know, the drought buffer. So you'll see those have been expended and sent off to both the county. The county bills us for both of those water supplies. The other item under memberships, we pay for a number of memberships, one of which is Cal Rural Water Association. They hold trainings for us and a number of different items. They've helped us get grants before as well. We also pay our annual encroachment permit to the county, which is a one-time fee, and then we basically have that for the year. And anything over, they'll bill us throughout the year. One item in the water fund I wanted to point out in expenditure is maintenance on structures. It was the same one that was high last review, and that was we had called our baker to help us assist with replacing. It was a 6-inch valve on Paul Place. Then we also had to replace two lines and 2 meters on Wilmar, and then they also did an angle stop. So there's a large item there, but it was a large cost, and we shouldn't have to do that again. The next fund is our wastewater fund. So same goes for the wastewater as it did the water. We've collected 3 of our 6 billing cycles. As a result, we're only recognizing 42%. Now, remember, we're more of a flat fee there, and that's because the first cycle that we collected in this review was still at our old rates. So this will, by the next time we review, we'll be back up, I believe, to where we expect to be based on our wastewater rate study we did back in June. Then under expenditures, we're trending very low. We're at like 37% where we should be at 50%. So there's a bunch of savings there, mostly under services and supplies. Okay, I have one more fund. Okay, solid waste fund. So the solid waste fund, you can see the revenues are tracking higher, and that goes mostly because we approved a resolution to increase our franchise fees. We used to only collect 5%. Now we're at 10%. And also South County Sanitation Services did a rate increase as well. So you can see here we're tracking higher than we expected. And there's only one line item under expenditures in the solid waste fund that is higher. And that was because we had 2 trash cans go in on our Adopt a Can program. One went in at the school and the other one went in on Pier Avenue. So you'll see 2 new trash cans there. So they've been added to our fleet. What would you call a trash can?
Inventory.
I was saying, yeah. So those are large costs.
Fleet of trash cans.
Yeah, fleet of trash cans.
Some of them have wheels, though, to Carrie's point.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Anyways, with that, that's the large line item there, and that's for a good reason. And you'll see those 2 trash cans are because they were adopted by specific groups. One was a Girl Scout group, and one was the PTA of Oceana Elementary. They actually have signs on them. So if anyone's interested, we do have that program. And with that, if there are any questions, this is receive and file. I have no budget adjustments for you to approve today, but on this item.
I think I'm okay. Yeah, the rest of you are.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Cassiola, for that. Hearing items, none.
Should we do public comment on my item?
Oh, yeah, I should. Public comment, please, on the budget.
Okay.
Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the close public comment and bring it back to the board for thank you very much. Hearing item, no written written communications, future agenda items, anyone? And adjournment, anyone want to make a motion?
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
First and second.